questions you always had, the answers you were never given, the place to seek the truth. Welcome to Veritas.
Tonight, we continue with someone who shares our passion for the truth. His motto is one of my favorites: believe is the enemy of knowing. On this program, we don't want to believe, we want to know. Because belief is also the enemy of truth. Most people think that what they believe about the nature of reality and what they know about reality are one and the same thing. But this is incorrect. There is a fundamental difference between believing something and knowing something. Beliefs, such as religious theology or scientific theories, are invariably arrived at through a process of logical deduction and or are taught to people by their peers, mentors, and society, whereas knowing something is always arrived at through personal experience. We know we are physically alive in this realm, not because we believe it based on some theory taught to us by our peers or because we have deduced it, but rather because we are personally experiencing it. The experience of living itself provides us with the ultimate, albeit personal, proof that we are physically alive in this realm, and as such, transcends the need for either belief or logic.
You are listening to Veritas. If this is your first time, welcome home. To listen to tonight's full interview and all of our material, join the Veritas family and click on the subscribe button at veritasradio.com. You can make your purchase with a credit card, PayPal, cash, check, money order, and even cryptocurrency. We are now accepting Bitcoin, Litecoin, and Ethereum. Don't forget to visit the Veritas store for Focused Life Force Energy, MMS, CBD Pure Hemp Oil, Divinia Water, Pure Organic Sulfur, Flash Drives with all our Sanitas and Veritas seasons, and other great products. And if you want to get in touch with Mel, want to be a guest on this radio program, have a guest suggestion, or have feedback, just click on the contact button of our website at veritasradio.com. And if you're listening on YouTube, like, subscribe, and share it. And click the bell to be notified when new interviews are available. And now, here's your host, Mel Fabregas.
And to discuss belief versus knowledge, and a full-spectrum parapolitical discussion, tonight's special guest is a veteran of this program, Crow 777. Crow is the host of a popular weekly podcast, Crow777Radio.com. That's spelled C-R-R-O-W 777Radio.com. He hosts his own website and a YouTube channel with hundreds of videos featuring both his podcast and astrophotography work. Crow is perhaps best known for his intriguing capture in 2012 of what's been popularly called the Lunar Wave. And we have a more comprehensive bio on our website. I just found out that he's also featured on the movie Shoot the Moon, which has gained national acclaim. And you can watch it on Vimeo on demand. Hello, Crow, and welcome back to Veritas. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks so much for having me back, Mel. Good to see you again. It's been quite a while.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. I can't believe it's been 2 years. I mean, I follow your work and you follow mine. And it's great to share war stories. And before we begin, just before we started, we just started discussing what's been happening to you, to me, and to many of our peers out there with this censorship that does not stop. And it's, let's hope, but apparently it's going to get worse. What have you experienced in the last year? Have you experienced what I've experienced myself?
Well, for me, if you go to my website, crow777radio.com, the about page, I wrote that in 2013. I have a degree in internet technology, and I was reasonably sure where this was all going to go. Everybody's familiar with all the things online that are given to you. And then when they get popular, then you got to pay for them all of a sudden. And I understood that once the big players took control of the information systems, that we were going to be censored more and more and more. And in 2017, in the fall, they deleted my YouTube channel. And the result of that, it came back 3 weeks later, we think maybe because so many people complain, but we're not sure because nobody tells you anything. They just do what they want. They could give a damn that you've got over 100,000 people who are interested in being part of the conversation. But what happened was they deleted my channel. The day before they deleted my YouTube channel, Crow777 would return 16 to 20 million returns in a search engine. The day it came back, that was down to 6,000. To this very day, all these years later, if you search Lunar Wave, depending on your geography, you'll get roughly a million returns. You add my name to the end of Lunar Wave, the guy who discovered it, it goes down to a couple thousand. So that kind of illustrates what's going on. Although I do have to say, as we come towards December 10 here, where I guess the user agreement rules for YouTube are going to change on International Human Rights Day, I have seen more subscriber gain than I have in the past couple years. So it's all a bit baffling, Mel.
Now, 2017 was before things really heated up. So you obviously had something that rocked the elite's boat. If it's the Lunar Wave, why did that cause such an impression on them?
So here's the thing, you know, everybody knows how it works. You get one video taken down, they give a strike. Well, I had two strikes and then they gave me the third and they took out my channel. The third strike was for a Lunar Wave video. But here's the irony. It wasn't even mine. Someone else had shot that Lunar Wave and asked if I would post it. I said, sure. That's what they used to take out my channel. Of course, it came back 3 weeks later after, you know, all the thousands of links that had linked to my videos were scrubbed, basically. So they leave it down for 3 weeks so that the ISP and the internet service providers, they start scrubbing all the dead links. And then you're kind of like shadow banned after the fact, as I just explained. But yeah, it was actually a Lunar Wave that I didn't even shoot that was my third strike.
Oh, so they claimed that what, copyright infringement, something like that?
They didn't claim anything. They claimed that, well, here's even the worst part of it. I was made aware of a communication where they claimed that I had engaged in hate speech. And I was getting ready to get a lawyer because I don't engage in hate speech. I love all people. I don't care what race, religion, creed. If you're a human being, I love you. And so I took umbrage with that. But like I said, 3 weeks later, it came back. They were saying at the time that I had crossed a zero tolerance policy hate speech line somewhere in the sand and that my channel would never come back. And I was literally one phone call away from going full lawyer up and go after this. I had the documents where these people were claiming I engaged in hate speech, which is patently ridiculous.
I think really, our First Amendment is just completely, completely changing now. The same thing happens to me. I love everybody. I don't hate anyone. And anybody who says that I hate somebody, please prove it. Any in my 10, 11, 12 years doing this, find me one single program in which I engage in direct hate speech, because I don't. I hate those people who are trying to poison us. I hate those people who lie to us. But that's the only hate speech I've ever engaged in.
Well, you know, I don't even use, I don't allow my guests to use bad language. I don't use bad language on the air. You can't go back through any episode and hear me cussing. I just don't think that's appropriate. And so the truth of it is, who knows, Mel, maybe the power has been exerted. Maybe it'll back off a little, but there are certain things to this right now, if you discuss them or even say them, you will be deplatformed instantly. And I can't even tell you what those things are because I'm a guest on your channel and I don't want to endanger you. You know, here's the thing, man, to have come to a point in the 21st century where people have been given a public forum like social media, where they've put thousands of hours, for me, many thousands of hours in video production, filming the video through my telescope, building an audience, talking to the audience, to have that wiped out so nonchalantly, it's like you've fallen down a rabbit hole. But what most people don't realize is that everything you've ever heard in the way of a law that protects free speech is about the government. Your government can't infringe on free speech, freedom of expression, these types of ideas. And so Google or YouTube or any social media platform is not the government. And what makes it even worse is there are plenty of court cases people can look up where private corporations are allowed to abridge your free speech. As an example, if you go to work and you're talking about something at your employer's business that he doesn't like, he has every right to tell you you can't say that here and abridge your free speech. That's been tested in court. So the problem becomes here is that the new public forum is online. And so all these old ideas of free speech that had to do with the government, the public forum has moved away under the aegis of corporations. So I guess we're in a time where all this has to shake out now.
It's a technocracy. That's what we have now because, you know, who, Paul, I forgot the acronym, but we have Facebook, Apple, Google. I mean, they're pretty much Amazon. They're ruling the internet. They're ruling the new digital world.
Yeah, we just heard that Russia has announced it's building its own internet, and everyone can figure out why. It's a lot of control to control, because basically in the age we find ourselves, the public forum is online. It's where it is. You don't have the city center or the town center is not the public forum if it ever was. Now it's social media. Now it's texts. Now it's emails. Now it's your platforms that you use for social interaction. And it has been a rough ride for some of us, but here's the thing. If you conduct yourself appropriately, you don't say bad things. You don't pick on people. You don't say things that you wouldn't say to your mother's face, then you've got a leg to stand on, which is how I've conducted myself. Unfortunately, we know darn well as December rolls in, if you mention certain things, the new user agreement tells you flat out, you will be deplatformed instantly.
And yes, you know, there are private institutions and they can do all they want. And yes, that's probably in the fine print that we all read. The people who say Facebook, and you probably see this, Facebook, you're not authorized to use my images. Come on now. Did you expect they were going to get a free platform to share with their family and friends and they were not going to use that? Just like Gmail. Who in the world would be thinking that you're going to get a free email account? Somebody's out there, an AI just like YouTube. Every time you upload your videos, or I do, I know they check every single word with their AI. And even one word, I've done experiments where I put one word in a 1 hour video and they immediately demonetize it, or they just completely don't allow it. And then I do it again by putting white noise on that word, and it's allowed. So it's very sophisticated, Crow.
But here's the thing. It's not free, Mel. It was never free. And here's one of the proofs. In 1999, I think it was the CEO of Sun Microsystems informed the world that there was no longer any privacy. And very few people heard it, but the ones that did laughed. They didn't believe that, but he was telling the truth. You see, what they get in return for you using their products for what you call free is all your data.
Data mining, right?
Data mining. And what people fail to recognize is cash is not king. Gold is not king. Silver is not king. What is king in the age we currently exist is human data collection. So to even suppose that Gmail is free, it is not. You are giving away everything. Your cell phone is the – you remember all the spy movies you used to see where people wanted to bug people and track people? Every person listening right now that carries a smartphone, you've bugged yourself. Not only have you bugged yourself, you've GPSed yourself. Not only have you GPSed yourself, you've shown everyone you know, everyone you've ever known, every place you've ever worked, everything, everyone in your family, every phone number you know, every email you've ever used, all of it. And that, when data mined, gives somebody a time machine. Because with all the data that is collected every day in this world, it could be considered an infinite data set. And since an infinite data set occurs every day and there's more on the way tomorrow, very few people understand that that gives whoever controls these mega data collections the ability to see into the future. They can predict future events to a 98 or a 99% certainty. And that's only part of it. If, for people who are interested in this, go look up Wisdom of the Crowd and go look up the Law of Large Numbers. These are now prehistoric ideas, but they demonstrate what we're talking about. The Law of Large Numbers is how Vegas ran for all these years with Wisdom of the Crowd. Wisdom of the Crowd is the idea where you go to the county fair and there's that big mason jar full of gumballs and everyone's going to guess. And the person who guesses the closest to the right number of gumballs wins something. Well, years and years and decades and a century ago, someone realized that when 100 people had guessed at all those thousands of gumballs and you averaged all the guesses, you'd be roughly within 10%. by the time you got up to hundreds of thousands of guesses, you were on the money. That's hundreds of thousands of guesses. Now make it an infinite data set. You can see where this goes.
Not only that, but the other day I posted on Facebook that Facebook, they are actually using your camera. If you're listening, every time you scroll, they take video of your face expression to gauge what your emotions are. And that way, talk about taking data mining to the next level. If they present you with ads or pictures, they know. I mean, look at China, the Sesame social score there. Now they're taking it a step further too. They're actually looking at people's faces to pre-crime, just like the movie. What was the name of the movie? Steven Spielberg's movie.
The Minority Report.
The Minority Report. That has to come here in the United States in the future. If we have all these companies, I guarantee you folks, all these people who are coming here to get their PhDs in IT, and they're going to India and they're going back to China, that information is the birthplace of all this is right here. And China is the beta test. Once they get it going there, it's only a matter of time before they break. It comes here, Gro.
They already have. Jason and I just did two huge episodes on artificial intelligence. I read the first two books to be published in the modern era on this one, called The Age of Surveillance Capitalism. You can barely lift that book. It's so big. The other one's called The Big Nine. The way this happened is there are three big companies in China, and China is, in fact, already implemented these ideas, and it's already been ported back to Darwin. Get it? Darwin, Australia, headed for Sydney. So it's already headed back our way. But what they did is, since China is a communist nation, actually it's a dictatorship too, because the president's in for life now, they snap their fingers and they do what they want there. They don't have any silly ideas of freedom like we do here in the West. But in the summer of 97, the biggest corporation for AI in China was invented. It's called Tencent. There's three of them: Baidu, Alibaba, and Tencent. Tencent is the giant. So they invented it in Silicon Valley. It went back to China. China has its own private internet, as most people know, and they copied Facebook. Facebook never sued them. You can see where this is going. And they implemented the social rating scores in a place called Rongcheng, with something like 70, I forget whether it's 170,000 souls or 70,000. It's a lot of people. But basically what it means is you carry a cell phone, and if you break a rule, your social rating goes down. And if your social rating goes down, then the amount to take a loan out goes up, or your ability to rent an apartment goes away. All these things is dictated by whatever your phone tells you regarding your social rating. That's what's been ported back to Australia right now. But here's the funny thing. So as AI was growing up, everyone can remember Jeopardy, when they had Deep Blue or whatever it was called beat human beings in the 90s. It was already way beyond that. In China, they had problems with facial recognition because genetically those people are very similar, a lot of them. Same eye color, face shape, hair color, similar haircuts in a lot of places. So they couldn't figure out how to train the AI to do facial recognition. So here's what they did. First off, they realized that if they could look at micro expressions, like when someone smiles, that would help. And secondarily, they realized that when human beings were in the input chain teaching the AI, it hindered the AI. So they gave the AI complete freedom to teach itself and permission to create more AI to solve individual problems. They then put up kiosks all around the city and told the Chinese citizens, if you smile into this camera, we'll pay some of your bills this month. The AI figured out how to do facial recognition in China in less than 72 hours.
That's incredible. And speaking of China, I spent time in Hong Kong in 1996, a year before the 150-year lease ended and it went back to China from Great Britain. And I always wondered how long it would take before China rescinded allowing Hong Kong to exist the way it was. And that's what we're seeing today. I'm not sure if you've seen the images of students and protesters, Crow, loaded into trains, and who knows where they're going. And if you follow the Falun Gong and what's happening to them and the organ harvesting and organ tourism, have you followed that too?
I don't watch the news anymore. And by the way, none of my devices have cameras on them. And by the way, my ancient smartphone will soon be a clamshell. I'm not playing this game. I wake up in the morning and I ask myself a simple question. Does a human being have the right to seek freedom? Does a human being have the right to freedom of speech, freedom of thought, and freedom of expression if they're not harming others? And every morning I answer the same way. Yes, I do. So the first thing I don't do is watch news, because there's a whole beautiful world out there, but the news never seems to recognize any of the beauty. Only the ugly things get reported, or worse, but we won't talk about that here because that's one of the things that can get you deplatformed.
Not only that. Oh, by the way, what I wanted to say about the scrolling of Facebook, some people commented saying, oh, I just put a piece of tape on top of the camera. Well, folks, not so fast, because every 3 pixels of your phone, of your TV, can be used as a camera. I remember in the 80s, I was DJing with a friend of mine, and we forgot headphones. And he said, no problem. Let's just connect the microphone, and we can use the microphone to hear, you know, in low volume the next song. And I'm thinking, really? You can actually use the microphone as a speaker? And not only that, you can use a speaker as a microphone. So you can use many things in 2 different ways. Your screen on your TV is a camera too.
Right. So if you're still holding on to older tech, you can maybe get around some of this, but it's true. It's been demonstrated that's the problem with technology. Think about this. Like, I don't know how old you are, Mel, but I'm at the tail end of the baby boomers. I was born in the 60s. So I remember an entirely different world than we're currently experiencing now. I remember when everything was analog. What has happened here is technology has come to bear. Now, when I was young, people worked on their own cars. Nobody brought their car to the mechanic unless it was severe and they needed serious work. You wanted your spark plugs, you did that. Distributor cap, you did that. New wires, new anything. People did that on their own. They changed. As a matter of fact, no one paid to get their oil changed for the most part back in those days. Then when we got up into the 80s, headed into the 90s, the look of an engine began to change. And they had these big hoods over them, and pretty soon computer circuit boards were being added in, and suddenly people didn't work on their own cars anymore. Well, there's a reason for that, because the tools that allow you to understand what's gone wrong with that technology are held by very few people and understood by fewer. So when we get up into all these household items that we all use, there are precious few of us who even start to understand how they work. And that is a big division from the days when I was young, where when I plugged in the coffee maker, I'm pretty sure I understood there's a heat coil in there turning red, heating up the coffee maker. It's not that way anymore. Now the coffee maker has a circuit board because the Internet of Things is coming. And when the Internet of Things gets here, or better known as IoT, everything in your house will be online. Everything you do in a day will be known. You turn on the coffee maker, you open the refrigerator door, what you pulled out of the refrigerator, all of it will be known.
Just think of Justin. My first job was at a grocery store before scanners. When I left, that's when scanners came along. But we had just-in-time inventory. Now you'll be able to have that in your home, in your refrigerator. It'll tell you, hey, by the way, that milk's expired. That other product's expired. You need to get this. It's going to automatically order it from you. You're going to be delivered at home. But I'm in my 50s. You and I are the last generation of people who has 1 foot in the old analog world and 1 foot in the digital world. This new generation has no idea what we lived.
What they lost.
No, exactly what they lost. And the way they're being trained in schools and universities, they will be fully programmed.
Well, here's another thing, Mel. When I was young in the 60s, you respected your elders. You did. That was expected of everybody.
Yes.
That's gone away. So part of what's going on here is you and I, the old guys in the room, who could tell the young people quite a bit about what's getting lost here. Problem is we don't have the respect we once did in societies. There are societies around the world where the older people are respected for the very reason I'm pointing out. But when I think of what they call millennials, the children that have been born around 2000, who have never known a time without the internet, who have never known all the things we gave up from the analog era, and they've been trained to think technology is so much better, but they have no idea the freedom that's been given away and the tests that are going to come. We opened up this conversation pointing out, you know, when you and I were young, Mel, do you remember there was this big kerfuffle in the 70s that the government was going to try to figure out what people, what books they checked out with their library card? Remember
yes,
that?
Yes, of course.
There was hell to pay. So many people flipped out that they decided, guess what? We won't mess with your library card. But now look, we wake up every morning, we log on. We don't just tell them what's on our library card. We tell them everything we know every day.
It's incredible. You know, when I was little, I was privileged that I had a neighbor in my neighborhood who was a English teacher. And after my lessons, she had a husband, an elderly husband. He was pretty old, but he was a former archaeologist. And I remember I would ask my teacher lady, can I stay and talk with your husband? And I would sit down and he would bring out, he was like an Indiana Jones, an old Indiana Jones. And he would bring out all these artifacts. And I had such an insatiable appetite for knowledge ever since I was a little kid. Today, I cannot see an elderly person sit down to talk about their stories with children because the attention span is now like, what, 10 seconds? So we don't have that little fireside chats that we used to have when we were little, where an elderly person would come and tell us their stories and we would be paying attention. That is gone.
It is gone. We've been, not that we ever had a lot of culture in the United States, but the culture that we did have has been decultured, a bit like being deplatformed. The culture that we now have in this country is based on entertainment. So basically our culture comes down to I watch some TV and I like some movies. And then the things that go on online between the young people. And the problem is there's always a generation gap of some sort, but it's like a generation canyon now. The young people have next to no interaction with the older people. Many of the older people are not technically savvy, and the young people look down on them for not being technically savvy. But it's sad because those old people remember how it used to be before basically corporations took over the world.
You know, recently we celebrated a giant leap for mankind and, what is it? One small step for man and one giant hoax for mankind, the lunar landing. How has your mind changed recently with all that when NASA keeps telling us we cannot go above low Earth orbit, but people still believe all the images of the tin can that supposedly went to the moon?
Well, that's belief is the enemy of knowing, isn't it? That's why I put that phrase together, because there are a couple kinds of people in the world. If you want to generalize and group in a way that's usually not very helpful for the most part, but for the sake of this conversation, the people who accept that have chosen to believe what they were told. So somebody somewhere, a television or a person told them something and they said, okay, I'll believe that. But when they quit believing what someone said or what they read and they look at it, then they realize this is not true. It's to a point where some people estimate that it's well above 60 or 70% the people who do not accept the moon landing. I have no idea what the truth may be, but it's exactly what you're saying. So all these years they told us we went to the moon. Now they openly say occasionally we can't go above low Earth orbit. Well, wait a minute. Every Apollo mission went well beyond low Earth orbit. According to what we were told, they went 250,000 miles plus beyond low Earth orbit. So you can see it's a bit like, it reminds me, and I know you'll get this, Mel, because of your age, it reminds me of The Barn Wall and Animal Farm, that book that you and I read when we were in sixth or seventh grade, right? It's basically the laws are painted on the side of the barn, but periodically someone rewrites them. And in the book Animal Farm, the horses and the dogs and the chickens couldn't remember. Wait a minute. Is that what that barn wall said 3 weeks ago? I can't quite remember. So, yep, that's what it always said. And there again, belief is the enemy of knowing. And just to put a fine point on it, when you go out during the day and you look up, do you believe the sky is blue or do you know the sky is blue? Just to make a fine point.
It's incredible how just people continue to believe everything they're told. And this is why I'm concerned with this approach of digital books. You know, they want to push people to just, you know, stop printing books. But what's going to happen in the future when all you have is digital books? If you're in charge, if you're one of the elites and decides you wrote a book, Well, that chapter two of Crow's book, I don't think it's appropriate to have them. Let's just cut it out. And future generations right. won't even see it. I mean, look what happened to, and this is not a religious show, and I'm not a religious person, I'm a spiritual. But I heard that they removed some books from the Bible. Why is it? Because it didn't fit an agenda, a narrative.
That's the problem. I collect printed books. As a matter of fact, I can't read anything off a screen, and I'll give some people a tip that's very helpful if they weren't aware. But your point is exactly right. If you have digital text and it said something like this mass murderer did this, with the push of a button, mass murderer could be changed to interesting man, completely changing the intent and the narrative of the text. Now with printed books, not so much, but recently it has come to light that all the blue light from LEDs and monitors and cell phones and iPads is damaging. So there's a little tool out there for PC users called f.lux, f.lux. Download it and install it. It'll remove the blue from your screen, and it gives you the option to let your screen dim as the sun goes down. The first night that I used it, my sleep was so much better. For Mac users, there's an onboard setting that allows you to remove the blue. And just so people know, they're finding out now that all the LEDs, any of them that aren't shielded, are exposing you to this blue light. And what you should understand is blue light is the shortest light wave, and red is the longest. That's why when you look at a rainbow, blue's on the bottom because it can't bend as much, and red's on the top because it's long. When you go underwater within a foot or so, blue light has already disappeared. So in the natural world, you're not, you know, exposed to the extent of blue light that all this technology is bringing. And all the LEDs that are not shielded are doing it. We went back to bulbs in my house. A lot of people can't get them anymore. But the reason I mention this is because people are starting to think that this blue light does real damage to young people's eyes. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I've seen some studies that claim it is. And it's not that hard to adjust your monitors and your light bulbs.
I heard that long-term, it may cause macular degeneration, but just like cell phones or vaccines, plausible deniability. If something happens in the future, 20, 30 years down the road, we have no way of going back. Oh, that was the vaccine. Oh, that was the cell phone or the computer screens. But, you know, blue light, absolutely. I noticed it before I go to sleep. If I am exposed to a laptop, it takes me a long time. But what you just said about this, I didn't know this, the short wavelength of blue light, the same thing with 5G. Of all the the waves, 5G is the shortest wave of all, and it goes through you. It doesn't bounce like 4G or 3G. Your take on 5G.
Goes into you, not all the way through. It's a millimeter wave. It's in the microwave spectrum. Microwave spectrum is not natural, but here's another thing that I can illustrate the point of blue light. I've spent years sitting behind a telescope at night. Anyone who's into amateur astronomy out there will understand that when you're out there, if you get your eyes used to the darkness, it takes 20 to 30 minutes. You can see so much better. But if you look at a light source, then you got to start over. And, you know, so what you do is you use a red light. All the flashlights at any astronomy party or when I'm out using mine, it's a red light. You can look right into the red light and it doesn't mess up your night vision. And that's another example. But the whole 5G thing, man, it's scary. You know, do we have a right to have a concern for our health and the health of our children? This is the microwave spectrum. And I was a Marine. I was a radio operator in the Marine Corps. And I was taught that you do not get around waves like this. Matter of fact, there's no wireless in my house. And here's another thing about the young people. They can't imagine not being able to get on a wireless network. Well, I got news for you. All that wireless radiation, it's not good for the human body. I'm a trained radio operator and cryptographer from the United States Marine Corps. Learned all about this stuff and all the antennas that we would never get near. The antenna forms that we would put a mile away from where we bivouacked. For more than one reason. But the point I'm making here is everyone is blindly using this technology without taking a careful look. And 5G, man, it's scary. You know, Mel, I've heard tell that in the 70s, most places in Russia outlawed the microwave oven because they knew it was so bad for you and that it kind of the way it heats water destroys the nutritional value of it.
5G satellites. Now, if you want to talk about a BS story, folks, if you need platforms on each light post on your street, very adjacent to one another in order for 5G to be efficient, what is this BS that we're going to have 5G satellites if these waves are so short or small?
You know, there it is. You're thinking, you know, you can't do that, Mel, because if you think, you're going to understand some things. You're told that a millimeter wave will go 500, sometimes you're told 1,000 feet, and it does not go through walls of buildings. If it hits a tree, the cells absorb it. If it hits a person, the cells absorb it. So that means if I'm walking down the street in a 5G city, there has to be an antenna every few hundred feet. And if I go into a store, there have to be more repeaters in there. And you logically worked it out. It's impossible for a 5G satellite to work, but I'm here to tell you satellites don't exist as described. There are no satellites in so-called space. You know, there's a guy called, I'm going to have him on my show. He's known as the Flat Earth Man. His YouTube channel is Conspiracy Music Guru or something like that. But if you search Flat Earth Man, he does just the funniest, top-notch kind of country music spoof.
Oh, that's the guy with the cowboy hat.
Right.
Love him.
And so, yeah,
he's great.
He did one on the satellites, and he shows, you know, for people who followed my telescopic work, all those little black things I filmed in the night sky, it's a good chance that a lot of those are just balloons holding up satellites within our atmosphere. That's quite possible. I can tell you certainly that nothing I filmed is in what we would call outer space. But that's all misdescribed from my point of view. And I'm not the only one. I just read a book called Zetetic Astronomy, and my jaw dropped open because everything I've said about the sun and the moon and eclipses, this man said back in the 1800s with scientific proofs. It's just that not enough people are willing to stop and think about things for their own self.
Anybody who started talking about the flat Earth, read that book, Zetetic Astronomy, and boy, it's going to open your mind and your eyes. But when it comes to satellites, we've seen these images from NASA showing, obviously there's CGI, but they show these thousands and thousands of, it looks like junk all over the place. You would think by now, with all your hundreds of hours of footage, Crow, that you would have seen a satellite here and there everywhere. Have you?
No, you might think that someone in the supposed ISS might stick an iPhone out the window to show us one of these things. But here's another thing, Mel. Back when I was still in San Diego years ago, behind my telescope, I did a lookup to see how many satellites Google would tell me were there. At the time, it said 20 to 30,000. I have this documented. Probably closer to 20,000 because I think the claim was about 10,000 of them are broken or something like that. If you look it up now, it'll be 1,000, maybe two. There's the barn wall being readjusted. But now that we're talking about this, David Weiss talked to both of us before I came on, and he wanted me to mention his app. David Weiss made an app, and he makes this claim. If you use his app, and it's one of the best apps I've ever seen, by the way, and I know Mel's looked at it. It's just so well made.
I have it, yeah.
Even if you don't accept any idea of Flat Earth, it is such an interesting app just for the map and the clock. But if you go to the App Store and you search Flat Earth Sun and Moon Clock, Dave Weiss makes this claim. If you use it for 2 weeks, you will not look at the world in the same way. And so I just put it out there to mention because I'm big on letting people make up their own minds about things. I'll say what I think is correct and what I have researched so that I have something to back it with. But at the end of the day, people have to make up their own minds and do their own research.
Let me ask you, speaking of repeaters, you're talking about repeaters. Are you a ham radio operator?
No, but I have known some people that were. That's another thing. During the California fire thing,
yes.
I was told that the ham networks were shut down. And there are endless accounts of ham network radios being hugely important during emergencies.
This is why I'm asking you, because in California, they are removing all the ham radio antenna repeaters from all over the state. And I'm thinking, what a dumb thing to do, especially with this preponderance of fires where people that it sometimes, if you turn the lights off, the only way if you have a generator would be to use a ham radio. If you remove that from the equation, what is that telling you? They don't want people to communicate. Are they waiting for some kind of event. I don't want to use the FF. You know what I mean? It's one of those words that they don't want me to use on YT and the video platform. Are they expecting something? And this is why California is a beta test, because they don't want people, if they disconnect. And by the way, what's his name? Hodges, Dave Hodges, radio program. I listened to his latest one. He has received information that the main communication carriers, cable, you know, the Comcast of the world, Cox, Sprint, Verizon, all of them have received information about a possible discontinuation of all communication, cell phone, data, internet, and military communication. Have you heard this?
It's not surprising. Anyone out there with half a brain should understand when human rights at that level are taken away by people with power, I let you know that probably something's up, right? And the real truth is during an emergency, you need communication. You need to be able to talk to other human beings. And we've said for a long time that so many people have kind of caught on to what's going on in the world, that next big thing that happens in our world, you'll probably see the internet go down, cell phones, texting, all that kind of thing. And if you see that and you don't understand what's going on, I'm not sure what to tell you.
And that's why I always say, and I sound like a broken record, if you can pick up the TV series Jericho, just watch it. Two seasons, but watch it. This is the early 2000s, and I always see it. As time progresses, I think we should learn what they did in that show if this ever happens, an electromagnetic pulse bomb, and what they had to do, the old cars, you know, the vacuum tube stuff. Because anything that we have now, forget about any kind of computer chip stuff, that's irrelevant in the event that happens.
Yeah, it's crazy that we've reached a time where we apparently no longer have the right to talk about things that adults should be able to talk about. Even things as simple as, is this harming our health? Is that harming our children? All these things, the ability to talk about these things is being removed, and that is indefensible. And so regardless of what happens to this platform or that platform, someone's going to someday have to answer for these indefensible things, because human beings do have a right to question what might harm them, to want to aspire to freedom, to think and speak about the things that are important. Anyone engaged in taking these things away, it's indefensible. It's all there is to it.
Something tells me that all these fires and a lot of what's happening around the world, not only in California, it's happening in Australia, it's happening in Europe, in many places, they want to get people away from the countryside. They want people to go inland into big cities, smart cities, in order for them to be controlled. And this whole idea of overpopulation, in my opinion, is just a hoax. You can fit the whole world in Texas, no problem. But they just want people in big cities in order for them to be controlled. Your take on this?
Jason and I did an episode where we went at the world population, and what we found from real live research is that there are endless cultures around the world that if their birth rate doesn't increase in the next three generations, they're going to be headed for extinction.
Yep. Japan.
Japan is one of them. There's tons of, matter of fact, the only ones that aren't are mostly in Catholic based countries where they tend to have a lot of children. And there were a few others, but everyone else, the population is decreasing. And so the opposite of what we're being told is provably correct. And so what I like to say is, for anyone who's been on a plane, you know, when you get on a plane in the United States, 90% of that flight is over unpopulated areas. What has happened in the modern era is that the vast majority of humanity has moved towards cities. So cities seem very crowded. But once you get away from those cities, the opposite is true. And the shame of it is people who still live out in rural or non-city life, they're eating more high quality food. If they're fortunate, they're drinking water without additives in it. All these things that allows a human being to think more clearly, to reach their higher adult mind more clearly, and to be healthy in a more substantial way. These are the things that are being removed from this age of technology and the bid for total control of everything.
You know, recently, because I know you also discuss natural cures and all that stuff. And by the way, I always have to say the FDA disclaimer, we're not doctors. We're not here to give medical advice. But I have a close relative. I'm not going to name names or anything because you know how they are. They come after you. But almost passed away. Thankfully, I got involved fighting my whole family because what I saw was happening was all the prescriptions were actually killing the person. It was nothing else. The doctors were saying, oh, 3 months to live, maybe 6 months, and we need to have all these very, very strenuous operations, and refused all of them, all of them. And it, in a span of 1 year, that person is now completely back to health. And out of 7 prescriptions that they forced to her because of insurance purposes, not even one. And now the person still has to go because of insurance purposes to retrieve them every few months, because if they stop taking them, then they remove the benefits. But now I've found every analog in the natural world and every vital sign is back to normal. And, you know, I just wanted to bring that up because I know you discussed this subject too. Do you?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, Mel, tomorrow, which is Thursday, it'll be Thursday the 21st. Jason and I are putting out an episode on the Rh factor of blood to demonstrate to people how important blood type is. And the idea that somehow a pharmaceutical company could make a drug that works for every blood type, is that correct? That's what we're asking. And what we found in some of our past episodes, like when we did alchemy, and just so people understand, alchemy is what precedes chemistry and science. It was a form of science that only achieved within what the scope of nature would allow. When you do an alchemical principle, it's timed to the sky clock. Most alchemical procedures start in the spring. And it's no different than like a plant. If you want to plant a plant, there's a certain time of year you probably plant that certain crop, right? It's like that. Nature dictates. But in an alchemical process, 3 things occur: the breaking apart, the purification, and then the recombination, or what's typically called the alchemical wedding. Now, chemistry took from alchemy everything it needed to become chemistry. And today, what chemistry does to make so-called drugs is basically the first step, the breaking apart. For the most part, there is no purification or no recombination. And when we started to look at blood types, we had no idea how important the Rh factor is and how important the blood type is. And actually, as once I started looking, I wasn't surprised. There are tons of books out there that claim, you know, if you're this blood type, then this is how you should be eating. And I'm not a doctor. I'm just making you aware of the research I found. But how can it be that human beings who live in the same world could have blood types that are non-compatible? One of the things we talk about is if you have an Rh negative mother who becomes pregnant from an Rh positive father.
That was my story, by the way. That was exactly what happened to my mom, and she had to take anti-rejection medication in order to have all of us.
So how can it be that the mother's system will attack the baby or the fetus as if it was an intruder? Remember the old rabbit test, Mel, to test if someone was pregnant?
Yep.
They would put the pregnancy material into the rabbit, and if they were pregnant, the rabbit would die because they're different species. Same thing going on, apparently, with an Rh negative mother who has an Rh positive offspring. The mother's system could fight that off as if it was an invading species or a germ or something like that. And when you begin to know these things, you kind of understand there's a lot more to be known here if you simply take the time to look.
This is such an I want to listen to your interview tomorrow because this is interesting to me, because my family, we went through it. There's 5 of us, 5 siblings. And my mother had to take anti-rejection medication because of the Rh factor. And I always wondered, like, what does that really mean? Were there different subhuman types here? Because, you know, as you know, a cat cannot mix with a dog, etc. But humans, one that can reject the other?
Right. Be fought off as an invading species. Makes you think twice about the stories we're told about all of us coming from a common source,
exactly.
Right? How
exactly.
can that be? But when we get into the Rh factor, the thing that most people really get interested in is it's called RH because it's the rhesus factor, named after the rhesus macaque monkey. So roughly, and the numbers are all over the place, but roughly 85% to 90% of the world is RH or rhesus positive. And that means that no matter what your blood type, A, A, B, or anything, it has these little proteins on the outside of the cell. That's what makes you RH positive. But there's another thing most people don't understand, why it's called rhesus factor, because the rhesus macaque monkey has that too, as do all the great apes have this RH factor. RH negative people, who make up roughly 10 to 15% of the world, don't have it and have no relationship to those animals in this natural system. But yet the RH positive folks, who tend to be the royalty or the people who run places, claim they're the first human beings. So I would ask two questions. If you were the first human beings, why is there only 10 to 15% of you? And secondarily, if you were the first human beings, how come you can't show a relationship to the natural world, which the RH positive people can, because there are other animals in our natural system that share these attributes of blood? As I say so often on my podcast, there is no lie in nature. You know, we live in a time where so many people just get so frustrated and they want to scream, is anything true? And what I like to say is yes. Any day of the week, you can walk out into the natural world and in nature, you will find no lie. So when everything seems dismal and you feel downhearted because you don't know what's true, just go out in the natural world. You learn something from a tree, a stream, a pond, a bird, a deer. There is no lie in it at all. And so those are some of the things that we're going to cover in tomorrow's episode. I think it's 187, maybe. It's actually 188 will be the episode.
My family, both my parents, we have Spanish ancestry. My mother, originally from the Basque side of Spain. And
well, there it is. That's the highest occurrence.
30% RH negative, and 60% right. Carry one RH negative gene. So again, that part of the world, the origin of the people is unknown. Their language is unlike any other European language. There's so many parts of our history that they cannot explain.
I have an idea. So the first time we went at the RH factor way back, Wayne McCroy, who absolutely gets everything I've done, he joins in and offers up research in this episode tomorrow. But last time we did this, a person from the Basque region who was an architect contacted Jason and I got on the phone with them. And I know what the books say. They say we don't know where the Basques came from. So I asked this man, who has, like you said, the unique language that apparently relates to no other language, who has 30% or better RH negative blood types, which is rare and special. Usually leaders or royalty have the negative factor. Most people don't know the first Jesuit, Loyola, was a Basque, to put a fine point. And I asked him, within your community of people who speak your special language, what do you tell each other is your source? You know what he told me? We came from Atlantis. Atlantis went down and we made it here. We became boat builders because we were maritime. That's kind of changed now over time. They're more farmers and other things. But I'll tell you one thing about the Basque. Those people eat some damn healthy food, man. I have seen so many things cover just the awesome quality of their food. And he was actually telling me they were trying to put a McDonald's in there where all the Basque live. But according to him, the Basque tradition is that we came from Atlantis. I kid you not. So who's right? The guys who write the textbook or the elders in their community who have kept this tradition alive?
I've heard that before, especially when I go to those places. But obviously, yep. I don't discuss it because to most people, they're going to say to me, oh, that's just science fiction.
Well, it starts to answer the question, though, doesn't it? If how can there be two human beings living in this natural world with blood that's incompatible? If there is some kind of an Atlantis story, that makes the possibility for a different group of human beings. How they got here, Lord only knows. But one of the ideas is that the light-colored blondish and red hair and blue eyes comes from that supposed Atlantean idea. And not only that, the Berbers, They have a super high Rh negative, the Atlas Mountains, named after Atlas, the demigod from Greek myth. Atlas apparently is encoding, those myths about Atlas are encoding the founding of Rome and the Rh negative blood types, wherever they came from. And he was considered, I believe, a titan and a demigod. And when we say God in this respect, like from myth, we're not saying capital G God. We're saying like the idea of Zeus. From my point of view, Zeus was never thought of as a god. It's an aspect of nature, I think, is a better way. So when they say God, it's lower G. And when you say demigod, it would be someone who's part human, part lower G god, or something like that.
Speaking of the redheaded people, you probably have followed, I mean, for the last 10, 15 years in China, all the pyramids there that right. are, they pay farmers to farm on top of them so they are not obvious to the population, but they have found all these mummies redheaded, and the right. Sino people, I mean, the Chinese, they don't want people to just like the Egyptians. The Egyptians, if you know the name Sahih Hawass, he doesn't yep. want anybody to be told
no.
to tell them, by the way, you did not build the pyramids. It was somebody else, the Atlanteans or somebody else. China, same thing. They don't want people to think that somebody was there creating all these megalithic structures that was not Chinese.
Two things here. First of all, Eastern Asian people have almost zero occurrence of Rh negative blood for whatever reason. The people that you're referring to had Rh negative blood, and it's hidden. But here's the idea as far as I've been able to research it. When we hear words like Cro-Magnon and Neanderthal, we think of cave people. I don't accept that there were cave people. The people who are Rh positive have what they call the Neanderthal gene. The people who are Rh negative have what they call the Cro-Magnon gene. So what's being hidden there is there were apparently Rh negative tall, red, blonde, blue-haired humans that were very tall that preceded everyone else. And then that relates to the biblical story of the flood. There was some calamity. And by the way, it's not just biblical. What do you think science is talking about when they say antediluvian? They're saying before the flood. So if you go to places like the Hindus, who have some of the oldest eon age cycle knowledge that can be found in the world anywhere, it's called the Kali Yugas, they will tell you that periodically the entire world is destroyed by water or fire or other versions of it, except this last time it was water, and so many people were wiped out. The only ones that survived didn't know how to write. So all these generations of people who couldn't write died before they started writing again. So we've forgotten the history of how this place works.
A reset.
So reset. Exactly. You got to wonder, you know, from the book Dune, I bring it up all the time. That was written in the 50s, and he talks about a thing called a Butlerian jihad, where the entire galaxy and that fiction novel fought over technology, and when it was all over, if you owned a computer, you could be put to death.
I think this has happened, Crow, for millennia, for millions of years. We have been around for millions of years. Different types of species of humans, if you will. You have the Homo floresiensis in Indonesia. You have giants. You have so many other species. Something happened. And I think this repeats again and again and again, because we have all these, the Antikythera mechanism, you have so many other artifacts that are found that are millions of years old that prove that there was some kind of mindset or technology in the past just by looking at the pyramids. We cannot replicate that today. And this was made thousands of years ago. I think, as you well said, something happened, in this case, the flood, and the people who had the knowledge went somewhere else or perished, and the few who survived, they didn't know how to write, and a few generations later, well, we had to start from sticks and stones again.
I think there's people who did remember. I think what everyone likes to call the elite, I think there's enclaves that have access to the true history. Yeah. You know, it's even claimed that the Rh negatives from supposed Atlantis, that blood went into the Iroquois Indians and other Native American Indians. That's some of the claims, but I don't think there's any other plausible explanation that some big worldwide event reset. I mean, right now we're all taught in school Darwin. Well, that logically doesn't work. if you can have a mother who can be pregnant by another human being and then fight off that fetus as if it were an alien, it tells you they don't come from common source. They can't. That's impossible. It's a bit like the whole mule donkey thing, yeah, right?
Right.
You know, if a horse and another animal within its species, kind of, you get mules and donkeys, one of which can have offspring, the other which is sterile. There's all kinds. Like, have you ever heard of a tiger and a lion being crossed? You should look this up online. It's incredible, the size of these animals. It's called a liger and a tigon.
I have, yeah.
Yeah, and when you see them, you'll realize, I think it's if the mother is a tiger, you get a tigon, and I think the offspring there can have more offspring. I don't remember. You have to look it up. But it goes to show that you can, in fact, cross the species barrier slightly. Maybe not species is the right word, but sometimes the offspring is sterilized because of it. But the point here is if we all came from a common source, how can we have blood types that are not compatible?
Well, I saw the other day a video of a species that was thought to be extinct for decades, the kangaroo rat in Australia.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw it, and it was a mixture of a kangaroo and a rat. And you wonder, how did that, all of a sudden, if it was extinct, how did it come back? Was it, how did the kangaroo have sex with the mouse? You know, how did it happen? And it makes you wonder if in the old days when they talk about the mermaids and the manticores and all the mythological creatures, if at one point we had this science, and I know this is happening right now under our feet, and there are countries that are doing this, and in the future with AI and robotics, I wouldn't doubt if they created a species, perhaps 98% human and 2% other species, in order to circumvent the law and say, well, no human rights because this person is not 100% human, and that would be the new slave. Your take on this?
I don't know, man. That's a bridge too far for me, Mel. I don't even want to consider these kinds. Part of it is a little too sci-fi, but I mean, the ideas are out there, aren't they? I try to stick where common sense will at least give me a firm footing, but I'm with you all day long. You know, how about the Hobbit race, or the so-called Hobbit race they found? That had me thinking. Here's a wild one for you. When I was a child, my dad got me The Hobbit, and I read it, and I thought, wow, this is fantastic. So I went through Lord of the Rings. It was like the summer of sixth grade. I think I started Lord of the Rings. Well, when I got older, I realized, why would anyone bother to put all those family trees and make up all those languages? And I started to think, is he allegorizing some true history that we're not aware of? And I started thinking along those lines. Well, lo and behold, a TV show called Young Sheldon actually said that like 2 or 3 weeks ago. I don't watch much TV, but I had mentioned it on a show, and a follower said, you got to see this. And that's when it started to realize. It's like the book Dune. The book Dune, the ones written by the father, it's a one-to-one allegory for how power is contained, how royalty works, how, you know, the Bene Gesserit witches, that's actually just an allegory for the Jesuit order, I think. They just changed the gender and made them witches. But to get back to the point, how was it back in the 50s, he could even have an idea like there's going to be a war fought over computers, and they call them thinking machines. It's hard to know. I suspect there are very educated and powerful people in the world who are fully aware of the real history of our world. And these tales get hidden in things like Greek myth, in things like Lord of the Rings, and things like Dune. There's allegories and real histories stashed away in these places so that the people with eyes to see and the mind to understand don't lose the actual real history.
No, what a great way to hide the truth. You hide it behind Star Trek, and I'm not saying that all of Star Trek is true or Star Wars or the rest of it, but there's plenty of stuff in those shows that has come to be true today. So if you have something that somebody found and they don't want the population to know because it would be detrimental to the, you know, what I call God, guns, oil, and drugs, well, then just hide it behind science fiction in order for people to not believe that it's possible for now. But, you know, we'll have to take a break right now, but Ancestry.com. owned by the Mormons, Church of Latter-day Saints. They have the DNA. I just heard today that 23andMe, another DNA collection agency, signed an agreement with Big Pharma. And in the face of it, many people may think, well, maybe Mel, because right now Big Pharma, they have one medication, one size fits all. What might be good for you might not be good for me. What if they started catering to individual DNAs in order to increase their profitability and make drugs more efficient? I'm just playing devil's advocate here, by the way.
I guess I'd start to accept that those ideas are possible if we weren't having our free speech attack.
Exactly.
It seems like we're going the other way around. And by the way, I don't know if it's correct. I haven't researched this, but someone told me that if you use those genetic services, you sign away the rights to your DNA. I don't know if that's true, but someone claimed that was in the agreement. But certainly it was well known. When I was young, I was adopted, by the way, and I tried to find out who my parents were, and the state of California would not allow me. I was told on more than one occasion, go see the Mormons. They have the most complete birth records of everyone in the United States, which at the time was surprising to me. But even then, I was not allowed to know who my mother and father were. So I am now 55 years old and the window is closing. Chances are I will never be allowed to know who my family was. And that starts to tell you something. So when you're giving up your DNA so readily and signing an agreement, I don't know, man. It's not something I'm going to do, but I know we're getting close to break here, Mel.
Yes. And how can people learn more about your work, your platforms grow?
Right now I am on YouTube as Crow777, but who knows if that'll be around tomorrow. They really don't care about all the telescopic work or the 150,000 people there that want to see what I've done. So I send everyone to crow777radio.com. That's my private website, crrow777radio.com. My co-host Jason and Rose, they run Crow777 Radio on Facebook because I won't touch Facebook. And I do have a Twitter page, which I just used to announce. So there's the places people can find me. And again, tomorrow, each Thursday, a new show comes out. Tomorrow, it's on the Rhesus Factor.
And by the way, let me just say this. I'm glad that you own your own platform. And I keep telling you folks, all those of you who write to me, how can I start my own podcast and this and that? Well, the first thing you need to do is create your own platform. You want to be on Vimeo, you want to be on YouTube. That's secondary, tertiary. But the first thing, own your own platform. And one last thing, I just had Sean of SGT Report. Now I have Crow. And two things that I envy about you guys. You have kept somewhat, I know your face is out there now, but you kept your name anonymous. I wish if I could have a time to go back in time would be to be anonymous. Because I've suffered through all these years because of my name, and everybody knows who I am now, and it's very difficult. And thankfully, I don't need a job right now, but I'm completely unemployable.
Yeah, that's the thing. See, what happened at first when I put up the Lunar Wave is the floodgate opened, and I had to change all my email addresses. I had to change my home phone. I'm not even kidding. It was unbelievable, the worldwide reaction that came from the Lunar Wave. And so what I did at the time is I said, fine, I'll be Crow, because that's a play on my birth name, my corporate birth name, which I no longer use. There's a whole story behind that, but it's wholly based on my corporate birth name, which isn't even me. As I told you, I don't know who my real family is. They won't allow me to find them. Point is, I put the Crow icon because I didn't want my privacy infringed on. And at the same time, there were people that wanted to make me famous. And I'm just a dude. The information's important. So all this time later, finally, Mel, when I did shoot the moon, I fully put my real life persona and face out there to stand behind all the work that I've done. But nonetheless, when people think of me, they see the little black crow icon. I'm not looking to be famous. That's not what this is about.
Same here. Well, folks, don't go anywhere, because a lot more when we come back. I want to discuss the Lunar Wave again. What has changed? What it is. We discussed that 2 years ago when I had Crow on, but I want to discuss it more. I want to discuss the moon. The fact that I heard today that supposedly Saturn is losing its rings. What's causing that? I mean, the work of Dr. Norman Bergram, when he told me that the ringmakers of Saturn, that's also working in the sun. But we'll discuss that when we come back. This is Mel Fabregas. You're listening to Veritas. My special guest today is Crow 777. Don't go anywhere. See you in the member section. Oh.
Thank you for listening to the first part of this important Veritas interview. To listen to the rest and all of our material, proceed to the member section or join the Veritas family by subscribing. Click on the subscribe button at veritasradio.com. You can make your purchase with a credit card, PayPal, cash, check, money order, and even cryptocurrency. We are now accepting Bitcoin, Litecoin, and Ethereum. Don't forget to visit the Veritas store for Focus Life Force Energy, MMS, CBD Pure Hemp Oil, Divinia Water, Pure Organic Sulfur, Flash Drives with all our Sanitas and Veritas seasons, and other great products. And if you're listening on YouTube, like, subscribe, and share it. And click the bell to be notified when new interviews are available. Now, proceed to the members section or subscribe to listen to the rest of the interview. You don't want to miss it. Thank you for listening to Veritas. Because you don't want to believe. You want to know.